prepared, and I am really looking forward to hearing what our two speakers have to share this morning. And they've decided that Pat is going to go first.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Pat. I'm an addict. And to get this out of the way real quick, yes, I'm nervous. They told me to come in here and share like I'm at my home group, and there's usually not this many people at my home group. And I didn't know I was going to be in a ballroom, but that's okay. I was talking to somebody in my network this morning, and they said, just go in there and share your experience, strengths, and hope. Just talk about what you've been through. And he said, whatever you do, don't go in there and tell them it's not easy. Because everybody knows it's not easy. But I got to tell you, it ain't easy. I found out for me, anything that's not easy, that's necessary, is something I got to go through, and it's going to be rewarding for me and once I get on the other side. As long as I run from it and don't confront it, it's going to follow me everywhere I go. A little bit about me. I know I don't want to get into a drug log. I started using it at 14. It progressed as I got older. More problems arose, all alcohol and drug related. Figure that one out. Charges got closer together as the years went by. Found this, was given the opportunity to have this program presented to me, and I grabbed a hold of it, and I swallowed it up because I was hungry for it, and I was ready. I was tired of hurting. I was tired of feeling the way I was feeling for so long and trying to stop it on my own. Nothing was working. My way wasn't working. And when I was put into this situation, I ate it up. I was ripe. I was ready to, I was ready to fall from the tree. And when that happened, and I started using 14, as time went by, things got a lot worse in that area, in a lot of areas of my life. When I came in here, life got a lot better. Some things still happen in life that I can't control, but my ability to cope with them, my coping skills, which is what y'all taught me, have gotten a lot better, and being able to face things instead of run from them. I tell you, I sat out there on that bench before this meeting, and I was debating whether or not I should just go ahead and turn around and walk on back down the steps, because I got to be honest with you, I'm not going to come up here and bullshit you. I got some fear in me right now, but it's good fear, and I know if I go through this, I'm the one that's going to get the benefit from it. I was asked to speak at this workshop because one of the people who is involved with hosting the convention is in my network, and he knows some of the things I went through. When I had about a year and a half clean, I had a sister who was 41 at the time, and she got lymphoma, and took about 3 months for her to pass away. That was very uncomfortable for me, and it was very new for me. It was compounded with trying to deal with my own emotions and learn how to get clean and stay clean and deal with the things that were going on inside of me, which caused me to do the things to myself I did all my life. This came along, and I didn't really know how to deal with that. When I was using, I never really lost anybody as far as a loved one or a family member. So when I got clean, this happened, and it was pretty raw. And I was given the opportunity. I want to touch on something real quick before I go any further on that. I also found out once this happened with my sister that there's a lot of other forms, there's a lot of other things involved with grief. than losing a loved one. And my closed-minded thinking had thought that, well, that's all it meant. But it has a lot of other forms, such as job loss, sickness, so many divorce, separation, so many different things that you can grieve, that I can grieve, where somebody doesn't have to leave this world. As sure as I came into this world, I'm going to leave it, just like everybody else here. And if you haven't experienced grief, you probably will. There's a good chance. For me, some of the things that were told to me. See, when my sister got real sick, I got real angry. And hospice came in and all that good stuff, you know, and they set up the bed and everything else, and they had a nurse. And first person I wanted to blame was the doctor. And I really wanted to go across the hospital room on him, because when he told me, you know, that there was nothing they could do. So what I did with that, I turned it inside and I walked around like a time bomb. And when my family had the funeral services and all that stuff, I went to it, I participated, and soon it was over. I wanted to leave, and I wanted to go, and I wanted to get past it. I wanted to move past it so I could say, okay, we've dealt with it, let's go. I have another sister who didn't want to do that. She wanted to put the sister that passed away, she wanted to put her picture up everywhere and have all these memories of her. I didn't want to see that stuff. I didn't want to think about it. I didn't want to feel it. And that's one of the parts that I found out about grief is denial. I was in big denial about that, and I didn't want to deal with it. And I kept bringing it up to my family. Why are we talking about this? Why are we going here again? You know, we've already done everything. We've already paid our respects. She's gone. Let's move on. And it didn't happen that way. You know, I was trying to force this process, and I can't force it. You know, it's something that has to happen on its own. I have to allow it to happen. This is my experience anyway. So what happened was, I had about a year and a half clean when my sister passed. And I went to meetings and I shared about it, and I didn't feel comfortable about it. But I come in the meeting and I say, well, you know, it's been 2 weeks since my sister passed away, and I've dealt with it, and I feel better. It's over and all this stuff, you know. And it was all bullshit. So what happened was, I still talk to people in my network, and I still talk to people after meetings, and we go to Denny's or wherever, you know, go to places and hang out, and run my mouth and talk. And somebody came up with this wild idea of, you know, going back again, my sister, I was the youngest of five, still am, but she was number three child, and we never really had a real good relationship. And growing up, I used to pick on her a lot, and I was really mean to her, so I had a lot of guilt that I carried around because of that. And I got a chance to tell her that I loved her before she passed away, but I was still carrying that guilt around, and I felt like there was so much more I needed to do to her and say to her and make up to her because of the things I had done when I was using. But what happened was, I was sharing that with people, and somebody said, hey, why don't you write her a letter? And I was like, that's crazy, man. She's gone. And we'll write her a letter and then read it to yourself. And so after talking about it, I finally did. It started about 2:00 in the morning one night. I was having a hard time sleeping, so I started writing her a letter. And as soon as I started writing, it just came out, and it just kept coming out and coming out and coming out. And I filled up one page, two pages, three pages. So then I sat down and read it, and I just broke down, and I shared it with my sponsor and a couple other people in my network, and I still got the letter, but it was a freeing feeling to be able to do that. And I'm sharing this with you because this is what I did to help me through this. Some things may not work for some people. I know some other things don't work for me, but that worked for me. The real test so far for me has been when my father passed away about 3 years ago. And I had to be there. I didn't have to. I got to. I had the opportunity to be there with him when he passed away. And again, hospice came in. And again, you know, I was right in there in the room with him when he took his last breath. And the whole time, I was very uncomfortable, and there was a big bottle of liquid morphine right there on the shelf. And I tried to call my sponsor. I couldn't get a hold of him. So I called my grand sponsor, and I told him about it. I told him what was going on. I told him what had happened. He said, "You're doing the right thing. You're telling me." As soon as he said that, hospice came in. They took it, flushed it down the toilet. So just by coming around here and trying to take the suggestions that y'all give, and it doesn't mean it's always going to work for me, but if I don't try it, how do I know? I came from a family that I've never met my grandfather, but I assume he wasn't real communicating and emotional with his children, because that's kind of how my father was. You know, so when I came along, you know, he was the same way, and I didn't know anything about dealing with feelings or anything like that. You know, the way I was taught was, if something happens, you suck it up, you move on, and life goes on. Well, life does go on, and we are supposed to move on, but it's a lot smoother and comfortable for me to move on if I deal with what's in front of me instead of trying to run over top of it or go around it. And once I get through it, I can leave it behind. I just went through something with my mom. She was having a lot of problems, but I did the same thing that y'all taught me. I came into the meetings and I talked about it. I called people and I let them know. It's gotten a little bit easier. The feelings are still uncomfortable for me, but it's easier for me to do because I got faith and I know it's going to work, because it worked for me before. I mean, I've been through it. I had my firsthand experience. And I found out there's a lot more things in life that are important to me than working all the time and having a job that takes me away from my family. When my father got sick, I work a lot of hours. I work a lot of crazy hours, and I do trade. And they said, "Well, you know, what are you going to do? Your father's sick." And I said, "I'm going to be there for him." You know, and I thought they were going to fire me, but they understood, and they said, "You know, some things are more important." And it didn't matter to me if they said that or not, because I was still going to be there. Because if I didn't, then that's something I would be carrying around, having to deal with, you know, and that's a reservation that might, you know, something else I might want to run from. That's what this whole program is about for me, is facing life and not running from it, learning how to cope with it, learning how to deal with it, because I didn't have those skills growing up, and I'm not blaming nobody, but I blame myself if I don't come in here and try to get them, knowing that they're available. It's right here, you know. My old grand sponsor who passed away, that's another one, and I didn't have to go to, I got to go to. He passed away in here, and he used to say all the time, "This is a smorgasbord. It's a smorgasbord. It's a buffet of recovery. You can go and get as much as you want, walk around 5-6 times, or you can go over to the corner and get a little crouton off of it if you want. If that's all you want, that's all you're going to get." How much time I got left? How long? Okay. Let's move on. Pause for the cause. Let's get into relationships. Lock those doors back there. Don't let nobody out. Relationships. I've felt a lot of grief from relationships. And I got to tell you, it's in a whole different category of losing a loved one. I mean, it is a loss, but it's something that I choose to participate in, and I've learned from that. I've been in relationships in recovery, and I'm not in one now, and I'm all right with that. I got to tell you, before I got clean, I was in about a 4-year relationship with somebody, and it was very unhealthy. I put myself in it. I chose to be in it. I signed up for it. I said, pick me. I volunteered for it. So I can't blame anybody. I can't point no fingers at anybody. So when all the consequences came down the road, I was crying about it, you know, and I was saying, why is all this happening to me? And when that ended, very ugly type of ending, it was a grieving process I had to go through. And what happened was, since I was still in active addiction with drugs and alcohol, I doubled the dosage. I started doing more. I started doing, you know, more, spending more time, doing more, spending more money, doing whatever I could to get more. And after I got clean, I read somewhere, and when I went through all this stuff with my family, hospice was wonderful. I got to tell you, they were really good, and they showed up, and they helped me through a lot of stuff. And they gave me these pamphlets, and they gave me the stuff about going through grief as a man. And it said in there that, you know, talking about the males, as going through life as a male figure, and you're growing up, you're taught, society kind of teaches you, you know, if you fall down and skin your knee, don't cry, or if you get hurt, don't show it, because that's a sign of weakness. If you're playing basketball in high school and you fall down and you bust yourself up, get back up and keep on going. You know, suck it up and move on. And that's got some truth to it. But when I'm dealing with some pain that's internal and has very, very obvious effects on me and my spirit, if I don't share that with somebody, let them know what's going on, and ask for help and invite help in, then I'm going to be struggling with it by myself. And I already proved to myself that I couldn't do this by myself before I came in here. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, my message is, the hope and the faith that this program offers, I didn't know was available, or I didn't want to know. And when I came in here and found it, I see it all around me. I see everybody, I see people recovering everywhere. You know, and I got into a conversation. I'll share this with you. Excuse me for a minute. I got into a conversation with my old sponsor. I'm going to throw this out there because I'll get some help. Got into a conversation with my old sponsor, and I say old sponsor because this is what happened. I had the same sponsor since I came in and decided I wanted to change my life, you know, to allow my life to be different for almost 9 years. And I just was getting a lot of negative feedback from the guy. So what I did, I was trying to give him what was given to me by him when I first came in here, which was the word of tolerance, patience, acceptance, trying to accept people for where they're at. And you know, because if I don't know about you, but if I'm not trying to do anything positive, I can walk into a I can walk into a room full of money, and if I see a pile of dog shit laying in the corner, I'm going to focus on that pile of dog shit. They got something negative going on over there. Never mind that money. And I can really, if I'm focusing on something negative, I can really overlook all the wonderful things that are going on around me. And there are so many people recovering these days. Yeah, it's true. People are dying. Addicts are dying every day. There's more recovering addicts now than there used to be. I know that's right. I know that's the truth. I know that's a fact. And in my area where I'm from, we only have 23 meetings. And it used to be, when I first came around, there was only about 15. 14s. I don't know, but it wasn't as many as it is now. And there weren't as many people around. And there's more people in the rooms now. There's more people with clean time. There's more people celebrating anniversaries. Yeah, there's people still dying. But if I go into a meeting and you tell me I have a chance, I have an opportunity to stay clean, and I don't ever have to use drugs again. And drugs ain't my problem, by the way. And if I make that choice to go back out that door, I can't blame nobody but myself. It's right here. You know, the help is being handed to me on a platter. And I got to tell you, when I first got clean, I came in, you know, I had an intervention through the criminal justice system, and I came in and I sat all the way in the back in death row, they call it. And I didn't say a word. And I said, I thought to myself, okay, I'm here, and they all fix me. And it didn't work like that. And I came in, and I sat in there, and I had a lot of anger, and I was just brewing and judging what people were saying and comparing out and all that kind of stuff, but still getting my slip signed. And as soon as the meeting was over, I was right out the door. And I kept coming back, and after about 3 months, you know, somebody was – in those 3 months, I heard one person say, if you're new – you got to come in and talk about what's going on. And I heard somebody else say, at the other side of the mouth, if you're new, you got to sit down and shut up. So I'm already confused as hell, you know. And then they're telling me all this. So I sat there, and it was just starting to brood and brood, and the pressure was building up. And I finally opened up my mouth, and I said, I don't know what in the hell y'all are talking about. You're confusing the hell out of me. And as soon as I said that, help came from every direction. Everybody in that room was talking to me. And after the meeting, everybody was talking to me. And ever since then, everybody's been talking to me. So I found out if I let people know where I'm at and open my mouth, and it doesn't mean that I have to be happy where I'm at or comfortable where I'm at. I just got to let you know what's going on. This isn't a psychic NA network. And we cannot read each other's mind, no matter how bad I think I can. But as far as the grief in recovery goes, I thank you all for being in here, and I thank NA for giving me this opportunity to come in here and talk about what I've been through and what has gone on in my life, because I know I couldn't have done it. You know, I couldn't have gotten through it as smooth and unscathed and been able to go on and do the things I was doing without the people in my life that from this program, the support I had, the people who listened to me when I was just running off at the mouth and babbling at 2 or 3 in the morning, you know, and they just said, okay, all right, You know, and then after I get through it and I start feeling better, they tell me, "Said, man, you were talking some crazy shit." But that's all right, because that's where I was at. But is it time yet? Okay. I've been notified that I'm out of time. Thank you all for listening to me, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to share once again. And I love you. God bless you.
And at this point, I'd like to introduce our second speaker, who is Morris.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hey. Thank you.
Yeah, my name is Morris. I'm an addict. I would like to say I'm nervous because of a lot of people, but nah. It's thank you, Pat, man. You kicked out a lot of things that really gonna help me. Grief and recovery to me means a loss of something significant. It doesn't really mean death. So I need to share that I like to celebrate the death of my active addiction because that was a good thing. Today I got 4,593 days clean. And that's when my life started. You know, I went to a party in 1961 and the party ended in 1990. I was 6 years old when I started using. I was 34 years old when it stopped. And thank God that it stopped in Narcotics Anonymous. And, you know, I was sitting there thinking when the young man was sharing that, you know, Narcotics Anonymous is not only great, I can always reflect when I'm in the rooms, because I've been here a little while, that this one person sitting in here knows the people that I'm going to talk about and their losses. This person knows each one of them. And that's special, because I'm not even from this area. You understand what I'm saying? But I, unlike the young man that shared the grief that I faced in the loss, in the death of loved ones, I didn't have that opportunity to say goodbye. You know, I've had losses like, I lost a grandmother a year ago. She was like 92 years old. And the grieving process went pretty quick. You know, she was 90, she lived good. You know what I mean? She had a long life, and she didn't suffer. I had a brother, I had a sister that died first in 1977. She died of lupus. And the day she died, she was in a coma. You know what I mean? She couldn't talk. And I remember saying all these things to her bedside. She probably didn't even hear. We don't know. We had to get to the afterlife. But I had a brother die of AIDS in 1989. And the last day he lived on this earth, he was in a coma. And I was very angry with the losses of my siblings because it left me alone. Thank God for Narcotics Anonymous. Because I have sisters and brothers here that I've intimately close to, where I didn't have that with my siblings. So I'm a middle child. And my father was the only one in the house that was my father. My sister and brother had another father. And they made sure I knew that. So it was a lot of infighting, you know. I mean, family reunions back in the day, they used to come see me and my brother fight to the death. And because I didn't have parents that kind of like taught us how to get along, how to nurture one another, how to respect one another. But I thank God for Narcotics Anonymous because I have three daughters who adore each other. And it's because I took the time to be a parent because I allowed y'all to teach me how to be a parent. But the biggest loss I lost was February 21st, 2000. I lost my father. And I went into shock. Oh, man, it's The thing that's unique about it, that person I was talking about sitting, I look just like my father. And I'm Morris Jr. And I'm proud of that. But the thing is, when he passed, I tell you, I learned the evils of how people treat people when somebody leaves here. The evil stepmom took all the money and ran. But before she left, she threw my grandmother, who raised me, into a nursing home. So within about a four-month span, I lost everything as far as the parenting. And I was in shock. Well, I'll just go back a little bit. The day my father passed away, we had the funeral. They had an open casket. He had a trach, so his face was deformed. I try to fight that. But you got to understand the rules. A wife is a wife, you know. So the acceptance level, you know, I had to kick in real early, you know. Because I had this thing called recovery. I wanted everybody to get along, you know. After the funeral, I came back to my job and was written up for sexual harassment. So you kick a man when he down, you know what I'm saying? And it was a young lady I had caught 3 or 4 months earlier having sex on the job. Instead of writing her up, which I should have done, and passing on to my supervisor, I wrote it up and had her sign it. So that particular day, I had that piece of paper. But it's like, the week that I was going to the funeral, I was just driving down the road praying and totaled my car. The day my father passed, you know, my sister and brother, when they passed, it devastated me. But I was able to move on. Even though I was hurt, I was angry at God. I was angry at them for not taking care of themselves. But I was able to move on. My father left. A whole lot of other issues came up. You know, I'm in recovery. And the process of that grieving, I was angry at God for a minute because I was like, look at all these other people you left on the planet and you took the favorite one. How you gonna do me like that? I'm clean, right? I'm doing right, right? Good husband, good father, right, right? I go to meetings every day. Why you take him? And then let me say goodbye. And then leave me with the evil stepmama. The one that took all the money and ran. So I'm going to tell you, me and God had some word for a minute. Wait a minute, you can't do me like that. But I got to understand that the young man has shared one of the greatest processes I have the opportunity to grow through was the death of my father. Because it showed how much he meant to me. And how significant not only that loss is, but the beginning of my recovery really actually kicked in then. Because now I can't say, Pops, I'm doing good here in recovery. See, because my reward system was governed by him for so many years. Now I got to kick in for myself. Oh, wait a minute. Kick in for myself. Look, I'm in the rules of Narcotics Anonymous because I don't kick in for myself very well. Like to be the victim or victimizing. So doing something on a positive note is not something that I really did without manipulation. So in the process of grieving, the stage of anger came. And I bargained with God for a minute. You know, if this happened, I'll do this kind of thing. That's the process of grieving. You know, I went through a lot of depression. Eventually, that job that, you know, that the young lady wrote me up for sexual harassment, they ended up firing me in 2000. I got three daughters, but my two oldest daughters have lupus. And they were, in 2000, they were going in and out of the hospital, in and out of the hospital. But like I said, I had a sister that died, but she died of lupus in 77. So I'm struggling to keep, I don't want to see one of my kids die. I'm talking about going in the hospital for some serious stuff. So I was trying to communicate with this job. They didn't want to communicate with me. I need some time off. So they told me that I took unauthorized leave and they fired me. But the point I wanted to say is that at that time, I looked at my world, and I looked at what I was going through, and I said, I'm not going to another funeral, even if it means losing the job. But in that process of, like, losing my father, right now, I'm starting to come out of it 4 years later. You know, before he passed, I had separated from my wife and I had filed the papers and I was ready to move on. But the closest person that I had on this planet to me is that wife. So I eventually moved back home and didn't work out, moved out again, moved back home again. I just shared it because I'm about to grieve that relationship that started when I was 17 and she was 15. I'm 48 years old now and she's 46. So we've been together a long time. But I understand that if I had to go and do it all over again, I might have waited. But you know, at that time when she was 19, she looked good. I'm going to say that she looked good enough to say I do fast. And I had my oldest daughter. There was three people at the wedding, me, her, and my oldest daughter. But my oldest daughter was in the belly. But needless to say, the skills that my grandmother and grandfather gave me, even though I wasn't functionally literate when I got married, but I knew how to hustle. Not dope and stuff. Like, I'm talking about I had four jobs. You know, work hard. Get what you want. But we were very immature. Very immature. And right now what I'm learning is I come to the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous because I had a problem letting go. I used for 28 years because I didn't know how to let go. I have to learn in grieving how to let go. Because for me, relationships like my man shit. When I was in relationships, inside or outside of marriage, when a woman left me or I left her, there were claw marks in them. Because I don't do no letting go. You know what I'm saying? I've been told it's over. And I call tomorrow. Hey, when a dope man say he ain't got no more, you going to call him again, ain't you? You going to stand right there or you going to get some more tomorrow, right? Hold up, man. I'm a dope fiend. Come on. I suffer from the disease of addiction. I've been clean a long time, man, but my disease hasn't gone nowhere. And the only thing it is I have a process where I can kind of like hear it, tell me that it's going to kill me, and I can walk away today. I can call somebody on the phone and ask for some help. Or I can go to a meeting, share about it. Or it's not, every now and then God sends a sponsee to call me up, and I can deal with what he's going through and get out of myself. But I'm learning today that, you know, the young man that shared before is like the gift that I got from the passing of my father is that even though I don't like how and things that happen, you know, I got to remember that everybody standing and sitting in here going to pass away one day. And we're going to leave somebody to grieve us, you know. And how it affects us is the mark that they put on our lives. You know, my father put a devastating mark on my life to the point where I miss him today. I wish I could call him up and tell him it still ain't going to be no good this year. And I did make that phone call after he passed a couple times. Remember, you know, I had to hang the phone up, he gone, you know. You know, the process of letting go sometimes takes a little while. You know, you got to tell yourself you know, like, you know how when we got here and dope was the main problem, you had to, you know, the disease would say, well, you know, let's go get a hit. And you say, well, no, I can't go get a hit. You know, you had to sit through for a moment at a time or a day at a time or, you know, a minute at a time. Well, in grieving this relationship, I had to do the same thing. I had to learn how to let go. I had to learn how to move on. I didn't really want to move on. I wanted to stay right where I was. Angry, hurt, confused, frustrated. You know, I have to write on my 8th step that's coming up. I got a few people that God put in my life when my father passed. And I was mad at God for putting them in my life. But when I looked, you know, when I did my 4th step, I looked at how nurturing these people were to me. Nah, man, God, wait a minute. I don't want this person. I want this person here. I want to pick who I want in my life. God put that person to help me get through it. And I, you know, they got to go on the eight steps. For real. There ain't no whole lot to it. Because I was frustrated. And I was afraid. I didn't know how I was going to go on. You know, what challenge do I want to have now? What do I want in my life? When this big hole is there. You know, but I can look back at the last 4 years and say that not only am I a productive member of society, I've accomplished a lot of things. I started my own business, and believe it or not, it's 2 years old, and it's still making money. Huh? But last year, I couldn't rub two pennies together. I had perfect credit, had bill collectors calling me, be a man, make a payment today. You know, I had to go through, you know, don't you know who I am? I'll make the payment when I'm ready. To being threatened and inside my emotions, going back and forth and back, saying, how did I get here? And what it is, you know, as addicts, sometimes in my 60s, I'm impatient. I'll say it later. I want what I want when I want it, and I want it now. That's impatient, okay? I'm rebellious, okay? No, I'm going to do it this way. You know, it took me a long time, even in recovery, to learn how to look at the street signs and follow direction. Yeah, you feel me? Like the speed limit say 55, not 85. You know what I'm saying? It say no parking handicap. Huh? Hey, look, I'm handicapped. Because I need that parking space right now. Do you know in the last 2 or 3 months, man, I actually look at all the signs in stores, read the sign all the way through. Huh? And then follow that direction. You know, the other day I was riding on the road, and it was like 4 o'clock in the morning, and HOV lanes in certain areas, you could, you know, roll at certain time. So as I'm rolling, I'm looking for that sign that say, you know, what time I can go. But I didn't see that sign, so I had to stay over there in the slower lanes. Huh? But I had feelings with that, because I'll share it again. Signs that say 55, I usually do 85. So if you're making me do 45, I got some serious feelings. But as I shared with my sponsor the other day, I'm letting go of that because, first of all, being 48 years old, I don't really like police officers banging on my window, asking for my license registration, and giving me tickets. Not only does that not feel good, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired of being sick and tired. And it's time to change. But in the process that I'm learning and letting go, and I got to look around and remember that God chose me for Narcotics Anonymous. Because this ain't where I wanted to come. I was court issued to Maryland. I'm from another part of the country. And when I got here, Narcotics Anonymous was the new, I wanted to say disco, but I'll tell you how old I am. It was the new nightclub. In this area that we live from, the metropolitan area from northern Pennsylvania, the tip of northern Virginia, was 790 meetings. I don't think we have quite that many anymore. But this was the Mecca when I was a newcomer. If you get mad at a meeting tonight, you have 3 or 4 other choices that same night to go somewhere else. So God picked me here because he know this is the only place I would get clean. He also know this is the only place that I would listen to better my life. Even though every funeral that I went to, I didn't share. My brother passed away. I didn't even go to the funeral. I sent my representative. And I went and got 3 bags of dope. Because I was mad that he passed away on me without saying goodbye and leaving me alone. Okay, when I was using dope, that came first. But when my father passed, I was a perfect gentleman. Even though I ain't like a lot of stuff that was going on, I didn't understand a lot of it. Because people was coming and say, you need to go to probate court right now. Man, look, I'm trying to put somebody down, man. Why do I got to go and block this and block? Because the evil stepmom took all the money and ran. You feel me? I said I didn't say it. Also, in the character defense, I was stubborn. Okay? But I learned a lesson from that. You know, what I found out is I fall down a lot in recovery. But ain't nothing for me to use, man. I'm not gonna fall down and fall into a dope. What they say, a shooting gallery. This is the best thing ever happened to me. Man, I'm with a woman 31 years and I can say goodbye to her and be all right with that. The process is already started. In 1990, the process started. I just gotta keep going along with the flow. People going past, I'm gonna lose cars. I mourn anything. I grieve a lot of stuff. See, if they change the, let me see, the last thing I grieve on TV, because I love TV, I'm a TV buff. I'm dealing with Law and Order right now, that new show, Law. Hey, man, if they take that off of TV, I'm going to be grieving, man. Huh? I'm going to be grieving, man. Look, grief is something that significantly to me that was taken away. That's what I grieve. And it's not death. Because as an addict, I learned there's a lot of things I grieve over. I grieve over change, man. Man, when them people told me you was fired, I was like, oh, wait a minute. Ain't there some negotiating here? And I remember being depressed, making 10 times more money, but the job told me I was fired. They put me out. And instead of me just moving on, I went to the grievance. I wasn't looking at the money I was making. I was looking at what they did to me or what they were taking from me that was significant. That this is mine. This is what I want. You can't just take it. And every now and then I think about killing them. But see, the program teaching me to pray for them. So you know what I mean? I kill them today and pray for them today too. But my prayers is answered because I ain't put my hands on nobody. I had to share this too. I haven't been arrested in 12 years. You know, and that's a good thing for me. But right now, man, I got to share this. Even though I have a lot of losses, I have a lot to be thankful for. I got a 14-year-old daughter, never seen me get high. I got a 26-year-old daughter and a 24-year-old daughter that when they arrested me for interstate trafficking, they was on camera. Because I left the car there and went and got dope, you know what I'm saying? But I amended all those relationships. And my 14-year-old daughter is normal. Right? The only way I figure you can get a normal child out of a dope fiend is you got to be recovering. I mean, the child is laid back. I mean, everybody else in this relationship is emotional. You can see them fly off the handle. You can see them going back and forth in their emotions. But this one child's like, what's the panic? I mean, you know, why are y'all so upset? And when they tell stories about how I used to use, that's not my daddy. See, the only way you can have that is you got to be recovering. You know what I mean? Because the same addict, not only will use again, will have that same behavior. See, I don't live in dysfunction today. I live a drama-free life. And I work hard at keeping it drama-free. See, the other day, I'll show you what I agree. Judge Judy. Huh? I used to love Judge Judy. I don't like Judge Judy. She yelling at the people, screaming at them, hurting their feelings. Hold up, man. But I watched her for 3 years, and I said, Judge Judy the best. She tell them just the way it is. The other day I watched, I said, she just rude and obnoxious and mean. Huh? But the grieving process was when I couldn't watch it, I had to find something else. You know? Because you know, an addict, good addict, man, it says in our reading, substitute one for another. I still wanted that drama, but I ain't want that level because I'm growing. I need something a little calmer. But see, what I'm learning today is that if you work hard, you can have every dream you ever wanted. Or you know, I used to have these fantastic dreams when I was, got that right hit. But do you know that some of the things I have in my life, I couldn't even fathom dreaming today. You know, God is good to me all the time. Even though I don't agree with the way God sends it to me. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes he sent it to me. I got to do a lot more work than I really wanted to do. You know what I'm saying? You know, because I'm an addict. I want to use the softer way. You know, I like to hit the lotto. You know what I mean? But, you know, God knows. He ain't give me no lotto money. Not that I would go out, but it was like, you know, my attitude would be significantly changed. I'd be pretty hard to deal with. You know what I mean? But God keeps me in a humble place where no matter what goes down, I love the space that I'm in. No matter what goes down, I just take it in stride. I wouldn't trade none of this for nothing, man. You know, my man shared about relationships. I love women. That's why I'm abstaining and sitting still and trying to learn. You know, I just share like this here because I had to grieve that being able to act out. You know, she look good, let's go, you know, be together. No, wait a minute, hold up. See, women are from Venus, right? And men are from Mars, right? And I'm from Pluto. You know, because I really don't get it sometimes. You feel me? I really don't get it sometimes. I'll give you an example. Can I get that one? Yeah, I can get that one. Me and my ex, when we went to sell the house, the day of the closing, you know, we got together, you know, on a physical nature. I'm big daddy, she's sweetheart. But at the closing, the lawyer asked me, Mrs. So-and-so, would you like separate checks? She hollered out, we want separate checks. And don't touch me. Wait a minute. I don't get it. Really, I don't get it. But I love women, man. The way they are, you know, I got daughters. The way they are, man, a man got to have one. But I just don't get it, though. You know, Pluto is a little further planet, further out. So I really struggle in that area, even though I understand what monogamy means. Because I was monogamous to drugs. Nothing, hey, dope, nothing came in between me and dope. I ain't want no sex. I just want dope. Me and, I didn't never cheat on my dope. Never. Dope told me go, I'm going. Get some more money, I get some more money. But I found in the last year and a half how to be monogamous to a woman. And it's a good feeling. You know what I mean? It's kind of bad to say I'm 40-something years old and I'm learning monogamy and I've been married 30-something years, you know? But see, it's not when you get it, as long as you get it. You know, some things, the process on some things, I got here, giving up dope was real easy. Because like my man said, the handcuffs, every time I left the house, I got arrested. You know? So it was very easy to see that that behavior was going to end up in the long term in a cage or somebody going to kill me. So in the process that I'm trying to learn today, some processes take real, it's nothing for me to grasp. The thing with grieving and letting go of loved ones that pass away, with my father, you know, it's 4 years, going on 5 years, and I still hurt. But I don't use. I don't act out, you know. In the grieving with my father, I remember females coming to me and wanting to have physical relationships. I said, no matter how much we lay down, I ain't going to bring my father back. Huh? All I wanted was some company. But certain people deal with grief, or certain people deal with situations differently. At the time, I wanted my father back. And nothing was going to replace that, so I had to sit still and feel them feelings. And none of them felt good. But as I grow today, I look at the rewards of him being on this planet. I look at the rewards of, you know, we were sharing, me and my ex was sharing about me and my brother. And we couldn't be in the same room for 3 days, because that's the third day. We fighting to the death. But we were tighter than her six siblings, because we could only go a certain amount of time. We had to find out what's going on with him. We couldn't be together for long, because we'd be killing one another. But we had that love where we had to see what one another was. And when my sister passed, you know, I just started getting tight with her, and she was trying to help me learn not to be a dog and look at women in one direction. And she passed, and I felt real hurt because of that. Because that was one woman I respected and loved. And she left really early in my life. So the void is there, but I got to tell you, man, Narcotics Anonymous is filling up a whole lot of stuff that I believe wasn't going to happen for me. You know, I was going to be a menace to society and a loser forever. And that's not true. I'm winning every day. You know, I got people in my life that really care and love me, man. So when God closes one door, there's another one that's going to open. When one person leaves in your life, you know, like I said, sometimes I get mad with God. It's, you know, this ain't the person I want. But I got to remember that God put people in my life for a season, reason, lesson, and a blessing. For those ain't here, I'll share it again. A reason, season, lesson, and a blessing. Because I can't push everybody away. Because sometimes God sent that person just to teach me a little lesson. I might not get no reward other than moving on to the next phase and what he want from me. And I struggle sometimes. Because I know God, see, one of the dope fiend moves God gave me, he put me in Narcotics Anonymous. That's a dope fiend move. I ain't trying to come here. I like standing on the street corner directing traffic all day. And a job, I don't need no job. I'll bust you in your head, take your money, and run down the street. So when God said, he picked my name. I don't know how he does his thing, but he said, Narcotics Anonymous, you going in. And this time I'm going to put you somewhere where you got to get some help. Because in New York, I ain't looking for no help. You know what I mean? I got friends right now see me, yo, what you doing? Narcotics Anonymous. Hey, man, hit this dope and forget about all that craziness. Huh? But today, it ain't like that. God picked me for Narcotics Anonymous to grow here, to learn here, to be an adult. Gotta share that. Being an adult. I ain't want to be no adult. I like running around acting like a kid at 34 years old. I have had kids in my recovery say, Daddy, you act like a little kid. They're 8 years old. I'm 40. You know what I'm saying? I wrap it up with this one last story. Because my heroes are my kids. I got to share that. My two kids, two oldest ones, they go in and out of the hospital, in and out of the hospital, and they keep fighting for life. Well, my sister, she gave up. She was on dialysis, and she just couldn't. She didn't want to live like that. She was a socialite, so taking a steroid, and she was like 5'1", and it made her look like, you know, it was a lot of fluid on her. So it made her look like she was like 300 pounds, and she was a socialite. She liked to look good. So my two oldest daughters look just like me, and they are big. But a lot of it's fluid. By them accepting the way they look and the way they are, man, they are my heroes. But my youngest daughter, that's my heart, man. She the one that got me clean because I stole all the money. My wife at the time put the money underneath her pillow, figuring I wouldn't steal from the baby. But I said I was a dope fiend. I went under the pillow, took all the money. And I remember being high and looking at that child and saying, one of my children got to see me clean. So, she's 14. When she was 10 years old, this is what I'm talking about being normal. And I'm understanding I have the disease of addiction. One day she came in the room at 10 years old and said, "Daddy, let's play." I said, "Oh, that's good. We can have a good time." So we playing. I don't remember the game we're playing. So after about a half an hour, she said, "Well, Daddy, I would like to do something else." I said, "Hold up. I want to still play." Obsessive compulsive behavior. So I remember scuffing her up, and I could see her in her face. She was looking at me like, "This cat don't really understand the game is over." You understand what I'm saying? But as I look at this child, man, this child is helping me reflect and move past who I was into who I am. So if you got kids, remember, they'll teach you how to be a parent if you open your mind and allow them in your life emotionally. So I do grieve, but not like I did before. In the process, I understand most of the time God put me in that situation because it is a new beginning. The longer I stay in that grief, in those periods of anger, resentment, fear, I'm actually not allowing God's will in. And let that process be the process. But it also shows me I'm still an addict. I'll keep coming back. Thank you.
I'd like to thank both Morris and Pat again for sharing their experience, strength, and hope with us. We got five, give or take? We've got about 5 minutes, so if there's somebody who'd like to come up and share the time, the mic is open.
My name is Dawn, and I'm an addict. And my dad passed away January the 2nd this year. I didn't have a real good relationship with him. But I did have a real good relationship with people in Narcotics Anonymous. And I live in Virginia Beach, Virginia. And he died in Williamston, North Carolina. And 15 people from Narcotics Anonymous came down to the funeral. 2 hours. You know, I can't tell people. I just can't. I don't have the words. I've been clean a long time. I've been clean 7,800 and some odd days, they said yesterday on the computer. I thought that was cool. They just push a little button and they go blip. Anyway, I've been clean a long time, and I made a lot of friends, and that astounded me. That surprised me. My mom passed away in 94, and I didn't have a good relationship with my dad, but I had a great relationship with my mom. And when she passed away, I was devastated. But I moved through the grief process. Y'all told me, cry, laugh, keep moving. On Mother's Day, when you walk by the cards, just stand there and cry if you have to. If you want to call them up, just cry. If you want to cry, just cry. Just keep moving. Keep one putting one foot in front of the other and just keep moving. And that's what I did. I took y'all's suggestions. Had a lot of clean time at the time, and I was beat down. My sponsees were there for me. You know, at that time, this is something I learned. You talk about learning lessons, you know. Something I learned was I thought I had all this clean time, take care of all these girls, you know. I had to be there for them, and I never told them any of my stuff. My mom passed away, I was telling them my stuff. I was telling them, "I'm dying. I ain't got nothing for you now." Y'all need to get your little victim acts together because I'm dying. And I'm making a joke out of it, but it was life on life's terms. You know, I, Miss Big Bad Addict, with all this clean time, was shot down, beat down, mowed down, and them girls had to be there for me, and I just opened up and I let them be there for me. You know. I didn't have a real great relationship with my dad. I really tried. I tried like a mother trucker to have a relationship with him, you know. I don't know why he turned away from me. I was the oldest child. He loved me. I was his favorite. I was his precious little girl. We went to church together on Sundays. And when I got pregnant and didn't get married, and when I became a drug addict, he walked away from me. And I don't know why. you know. I mean, those are good reasons. Whatever. I don't know why. I don't know why he just turned his back on me. And for 20-some years, I tried to impress him, get his attention, show him that I loved him. I sent him birthday cards. I sent him letters. I called him on the phone. I said, "I'm here. Where did you go?" And in the last 5 years of his life, I found something to have a relationship with him over. And y'all taught me, even though, like you were talking, you know, like sometimes the people that God puts in your life, I don't like the way God tries to teach me how to accept things. Sometimes I want to accept it the way I want to accept it. I want you to do what I want you to do, God. So I sent my daddy some lottery tickets for Father's Day. He loved them. I got all kinds of response. You know, he would scratch them and send them back. "I won $2. Send me 2 more tickets." And that was the relationship that me and my dad had the last 5 years of his life. You know, I sent lottery tickets to him. He scratched them, sent them back. He'd send me two little sentences saying, "I was down at the store and I was showing my friends these tickets. Send me some more." You know, and at first I wanted to be mad at God. I wanted the relationship I wanted. I wanted Beaver and Wally. I'm clean. I've been clean 15 years, God. What? Why can't I have that? You know, sometimes I miss the hell out of it. I just miss that. I miss whatever I didn't think I had with him or whatever. And God's blessed me in many, many ways. God blessed me by sending them people to the funeral. God blessed me by my sisters coming together. Me and my family came together. And my dad had a cat that nobody could take. And I've got a roommate that don't like cats. And I decided, okay, I'm going to go talk to her. I thought, I'm going to take the cat. I'm going to try to get the cat. I went to my roommate and I said, "This is the deal. Nobody can take it. Could you let me have it? I'll do the best I can to keep it out of your way." And she said, "Okay." I said, "That's cool." And I went and got this cat. This cat has blessed my life. She sleeps right up next to me like this, right in the crook of my arm. And sometimes I feel like I'm close to my dad. I look up at him and I say, "I think she likes me. Isn't that cool?" And that helps me put one foot in front of the other and keep going. He had a name for her. He had a strange sense of humor sometimes. He called her Strangely. And my sisters asked me, "You going to change the cat's name?" I said, "I don't know yet. I hadn't figured it out yet." So I talked to some cat lovers and I said, "What do you think? My dad passed away. He's got a funky name for his cat. Be okay if I changed it?" And they said, "Yeah." People in Narcotics Anonymous that love me, just love me, you know, said, "Go ahead and change it." So I changed her name to Emily. And I call her Emmy for short. That makes me feel closer to my dad so that I can keep walking, so that I can keep going, you know, so that I don't have to act out because I want to act out. You know, I started going to Weight Watchers about 8 months ago and I've lost 50 pounds.
Come on, baby.
You know, I want to eat chocolate, okay? This couple of men walked across my path.
"You look good."
I want to go. I want to show them how good I look. I haven't acted out yet. I haven't acted out on any of that yet. These little things that I was talking about, that helps me keep going and not acting out. Because this addict mess that still lives up here wants to do. Go ahead. Go ahead. You can do it. You can do it just one time. You can do it just one time. I got this thing up here that says if you just don't get caught, it'll be all right.
Oh, man.
Anyway, I appreciate the two speakers that spoke. I really appreciate that. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.